VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, me on the right side of your radio dial, Adam over there on the left side, if you look carefully. And we're here to do, as we always do, bring you up to date on some things that have been going on and talk about some concepts in the financial world that we really like. But mostly, we are here because we would like to answer your questions, and that is so easy that all you have to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and the callers always go to the head of the line, so if you're the first one in, you'll be up immediately. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. We'd just like to keep it sort of related to finance and either the big world or the personal, macro or micro, doesn't really matter to us. Whatever's on your mind, we are here to talk about it. Once in a great while, we get a question we don't know the answer to, and we will always bring that to you next week, make the promise, and we deliver. But that doesn't happen all that often. In order to do what we do, you got to have a pretty good working knowledge of all kinds of interesting things. Plus, we've just been around this planet for a good long time, so if you live for almost 70 years and keep your eyes open, you know a few things. One thing you do know is that you don't know everything. Some people haven't learned that one yet. Got it?
Got it.
Adam and I, as you know, especially me, I try to sort of condense the week in the market to a word or maybe a very short phrase. So we had to collaborate on this one yesterday. And actually, Adam came up with it. But we found the perfect word for this week in the market, and that word is chaos.
Yep, and you could even expand on that if you had to go a couple words and put in Twitter-induced chaos.
I like it.
Such is the power of the President Trump's Twitter feed that he absolutely rocked the markets this week with a single tweet. And really, he was just delivering news that it happened in China, but the once it hits the Twitter sphere, it really seems to become fact, and the markets did not like what they heard out of President Trump on Monday. The China deal does not look like it's progressing as quickly as we had thought as recently as last week, and in fact, on Friday, he said something to the effect of, if it happens, it happens, we'll be good either way. So,
and everybody with half a brain knows what they're doing. They're waiting to see how popular he is when the election's coming close. As if looks like he's going to be defeated, they're not going to deal with him. They're going to deal with the imbecile that replaces him. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's a very possible strategy that they're using. But
the fact that they deny it vehemently,
that means
that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
It is China.
It is.
After all.
If you take that theory out, though, it really looks like they're willing to self-destruct their own economy for the sake of not striking a deal with the U.S. So that's a interesting strategy.
I think interesting that, in air quotes.
I think that we'll be okay either way. I think Trump is actually right about that on Friday. I think we'll be okay either way. Yes, it will hurt a little bit, but it won't hurt like it will hurt China. China really stands to lose a lot more. We're their biggest customer. So if they lose us, that's going to hurt no matter what. It's an interesting strategy. For all the volatility this week, the market itself was essentially flat. The Dow fell just 0.7%, the NASDAQ 0.6%, and the S&P 0.5%. Year-to-date, the Dow is still up more than 12%, the S&P 16%, and the NASDAQ is still up 20%. So despite this recent bout of volatility, things are still looking pretty good this year.
A little fact. Monday was a 5% plus down day in the market. We averaged.
Yeah, it didn't end down that much.
No, but that kind of volatility. I'm not sure it actually did or didn't.
I think it was down about 3%.
Okay, well, the 5% changes happen within a trading day on average twice a year. Mm-hmm. This was the second time. Isn't that interesting?
This year? Or?
This year. Okay. Second time this year. Okay. Now, just put it in perspective. In 2017, we had none.
Right.
But in 2007, which was leading up to all the misery,
sure,
there were 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
That hurts.
So just don't expect that these days are going to come up real frequently, but don't be shocked by them either.
That's my point. It's pretty normal. We had a client say something about the volatility. No, nothing crazy, but just kind of questioning it, calling it extreme. And I said, not really. It's kind of more normal than what we've gotten used to over the last couple of years.
Yeah, the volatility index actually was up, but not that much.
No. Volatility is still very, very low historically. Not very low, but it's lower than normal. So it feels bad, but it's really healthy.
It is, absolutely.
So despite the down week, some sectors managed gains. Utilities were up 1.2%, materials up 0.7%, and healthcare, consumer staples, and consumer discretionary all saw small gains. Energy was hit the hardest, down more than 2%, and financials were off 1.5%. International markets were not a lot better than the U.S. Mexico was the biggest winner, up 0.7%. Hong Kong dropped 3.5%. China, Italy, and Australia all dropped around 3%. So international markets got hit harder than us. And that Hong Kong situation does not appear to be coming to a quick end.
Ooh,
it's been
nine more peaceful
weeks.
One, I fear.
No, it's getting kind of ugly.
Yeah.
So keep an eye on that. That could shock the Asian markets. The big winners for the week were gold, which was up 4%, silver up 4.6%, and fixed income. Long treasuries are now up an astonishing 17% this year. That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Tips had a nice week, adding almost 1% as well. The economic data this week was, I call it mixed. The ISM non-manufacturing report, by far the more important of the two ISM reports, came in lower than expected, just like the manufacturing report. The reading was a 53.7, which still shows steady growth.
Yeah, it's expansionary.
But the forecast was 55.5, and last month was 55.1. It's the lowest reading since 2016. So,
yeah, do what I do. Blame the forecasters.
Well, no, I don't think – it doesn't bother me that I missed the forecast. It bothers me that the trend is down.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
I agree.
The JOLTS report came in stronger than expected, showing more available jobs than forecasted. There are almost 1.4 million more available jobs than people looking for work today. Initial jobless claims fell to 209,000 this week, so on the job front, America is doing really well. Earnings season wraps up next week, but most companies have already reported. The earnings beat rate sits at a pretty disappointing 57.2, while the revenue beat rate stands at a decent 57.4. The revenue beat rate is typically lower than the earnings beat rate. In addition, forward guidance has been negative for the quarter, although not as negative as it was a couple quarters ago. Technology has the highest beat rate of any sector, followed by financials and healthcare. And the weakest has been utilities, energy, and materials.
I'll tell you, if I were a CEO giving guidance on my company with the way the world is positioned right now,
I'd always go negative.
Oh, God, yes.
Because then you blow it out every quarter.
Yeah. This China thing... It's not our trade deal with China that concerns me. It's Hong Kong that concerns me.
That could be a potential real problem.
Yeah, sit-ins in airports, those are good, peaceful things. This thing will not remain peaceful if it keeps going. And that is not good for anybody.
Agreed.
That's what I think.
Agreed.
Okay. All right, a couple more notes on the market itself when we get back, and I'll give out the quick trivia questions about American history. We have ratified 27 constitutional amendments. How many over time have been proposed to the nearest thousand? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And again, the trivia question is open. It's sponsored, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. Home or business. And he covers both of ours. In the history of the U.S., only 27 constitutional amendments have been ratified. How many have been proposed to the nearest thousand? Which is kind of a... To me, the shock is almost in the asking of the question, not in the answer. is, wow, that's a lot of amendments. I was joking with Adam right before we came on that in Florida, I think it's the other way. We've got 800 amendments out of the 600 they proposed or something like that. Florida has a very serious amendment problem. It has to get fixed. And guess what it'll take to fix it? A constitutional amendment.
Which everyone will vote for because that's yeah. what we do.
So I guess that makes it easy, doesn't it? What can I say? Anyway, a couple of things just to hit some highlights before we leave the market for the week. The unemployment claims dropped once again, surprised a bunch of people, down to 209,000. That is not a sign that there is a recession coming or that consumers are going to pull back. The non-adjusted, those numbers we always give are seasonally adjusted. The non-adjusted number was only 178,700, and that represents the smallest change since 1986. And this rate that we have of first-time unemployment claims is not adjusted for population growth. So every week, we're at 96 weeks now where the unemployment claims have been less than 250,000. That is a record by any stretch of the imagination. So if you're seeking a job or want more money, you are in the right place at the right time. And speaking of more money, we've been talking about this and toying with a little bit, and I can't find anybody doing this, so if anybody can find the answers, let me know. But I would like to see, because the numbers are saying we're between about 3.1 and 3.5 for wage increases year over year. I would like to see that number. If you factored in all the retired people, so here's what you would have to do. You take everybody who retired in the month and add up their wages and salaries. Then you take everybody who replaced them, not new jobs, just replacement jobs, and add up their wages and salaries. That difference will be a lot of money. Divide that by the number of people you're talking about, and you would add the impact. In other words, this has a dampening effect on what is reported to be wage and salary increases, and it's due to all the heavy retirements, due to the baby boomer aging process. So if anybody wants to get a grant for a study, I will fund it. I will give you your first dollar, and then I'll double that if you can come up with the right answer. And that's wow. That's right out of my pocket.
So generous.
I know, but I'd love to know. Somebody's got to be thinking about this. You and I don't come up with great ideas that somebody out there in all of academia hasn't come up with. I just think they don't want to do it.
Maybe.
That's my suspicion. Yeah. Never know. Anyway, you all have heard before that we occasionally write to our clients and friends, and it's usually when there's something really bad. It's occasionally, very rarely, when something's really good. And then there are other times where it just seemed like the right time. Now, on Monday, we had the net 700 some point day, and that was a bounce back from where it was. Actually, we close down?
Which
about, closed down about 700.
Yeah, it? Monday. Yeah.
And it had been even worse. So it was an ugly feeling all over the place on Monday. And again, was there a reason or maybe an excuse? Yeah, you could come up with something. But it wasn't going to be a sea change that should truly affect the market. So I decided it's that time again. And we wrote everybody for early Tuesday morning so they'd see this before the market opened. And I'm going to share it. Less than 8 months ago, on December 28th, 2018, it was an ugly period on Wall Street, and we wrote about what we'd been thinking. Today, we dusted off the old communication, and we'll share the highlights now. And here's how it began, and I quote, "To our valued clients and friends, politics and economics both drive the market. One short-term and often irrational, the other long-term and fundamentally accurate. Right now, politics is trumping economics, pun intended. We are probably smarter to ignore politics, but that is difficult in tumultuous times like these. Nonetheless, cooler heads will always prevail, but when it will start is anyone's guess. How many of you remember when we distributed a market news blurb that essentially pointed out that this is not 2007, which had to do with economics? It wasn't all that many months ago, and our economy has only improved since then. Our politics, on the other hand, have not. Just as economics overcame political turmoil months ago, the same will happen this time." Unquote. 6 days after that letter went out in December, six market days, The Dow rose 1,086.25 points. The gains continued into 2019, and market indices all set multiple new records this year, including as recently as 2 weeks ago. That wasn't in the letter, but it was 2 weeks ago when I wrote that. In short, this turmoil is about one thing, trade, which is politics. As a voting population, we agreed in 2016 that our system was badly broken and needed to be fixed. We elected Trump to fix it, and no one ever proclaimed that there would be no short-term pain on the road to a solution. For decades, when push came to shove, politicians rolled over and other countries won. No more. For every bit of pain and suffering we are currently experiencing, China is experiencing much more. They're about four times larger in population and considerably more dependent on us than we are on them. No great victory ever came without cost, and it's unreasonable to assume that the current trade imbalance will be solved overnight. We have no idea when this market madness will end, but our guess is sooner rather than later. And when it ends, there will likely be a rebound along the lines of late December and early January. It would be a shame to miss out by turning tail and running now. Staying in the market seems to be the wise decision. Today, the market is driven by politics that never lasts long. Economics will soon prevail, and ours are pretty darn good right now. Enjoy the last days of summer and be assured we're carefully watching. So that was our feeling, and the rest of the week was not perfect, but it certainly did not echo the poor sentiments that were out there on Monday. And I think we're all kind of sitting back today more or less relieved. There's also some indicators out there in history that this kind of market mess will eventually arrive at a really nice period of time upcoming. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Are you feeling like maybe today's the lucky day?
I don't know. I hope so.
All right. You give it a shot. This is, I assume, is about the amendments?
Yes, it is.
All right.
11,770.
Somebody's got a fast computer. You are, of course, correct. Isn't that remarkable?
It is remarkable.
I love trivia questions that just kind of blow you away. And when I read that, it was amazing to me. It does.
I know, it's amazing. And it was the first 10,000 were like in the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So you can kind of take those out because uh-huh. they almost don't count.
Really? It's 17 right. times since then. And one of them canceled another one. You could theoretically yep. subtract 12 from that. 15 actual substantive. Boy, that's easy for me to say. Substantive things have happened since the Constitution was ratified.
So a constitutional yeah. amendment has a less than 0.2% chance of getting passed, should it be proposed.
I can only...
That's probably a good thing.
Is a good thing.
Yes, I agree. I
think the single best thing about our Constitution is brevity.
I've
always felt that. Remember when Justice Ginsburg was saying that she didn't like ours as much as South Africa. Theirs is 15,000 pages, and it itemizes one by one the rights granted to citizens instead of rights.
They got it backwards.
Yeah.
They got it backwards, right.
They had a top-down government controls everything, and here are the things we'll give to you plebs in our Constitution. That is so backwards.
By the way, they forgot the color of my toothbrush, you know?
yeah, exactly.
I'm sure somebody tried to get it in there and they just forgot.
Probably.
Anyway, it was an actual wonderful question that doesn't have that much to do with economics, except I do believe in great measure it has enhanced our political and economic stability over a couple hundred years.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Freedom in the market means freedom to make money, right?
Yep, you got that right.
I'm going to just guess that we probably have your address on file.
I'm going to just guess that maybe you might not. Have you gotten the new address?
Yes, okay. we have it.
Okay, then you have it. Yep.
Congrats on the move. We have it.
All right, great. Okay. I appreciate the call, Pat. You have a great day.
Okay, you too. Talk to you later. Bye. Thanks.
All right, so we have an answer just like that, 11,000 and a bunch of change.
That's crazy.
And you got to really get rid of the first 10 because they weren't proposed.
Yeah.
They were put in.
Well, that's why I said less than 0.2. It's actually just above 0.2%. But if you take out those 10, then it's below.
It really, to me, it gives me a great appreciation for the foresight of the people who wrote the thing in the first place. Look at the change in society in that time. And in that whole time, we've only had to change it another 17 times, one of which canceled one. Mm-hmm. That is truly remarkable. And as I say, stability equals wealth. Remember what wise old man once said. Governments can print money, but governments can't print wealth. You know who said that?
No.
Me. He's laughing. All right, much more when we get back. We've got some topics of interest. If you got to send a kid to college, I have some things that you need to handle that could very much impact a lot more than just your money, but that's certainly one of them. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And our lines are open, 904-222-8255. And we can talk about whatever it is that's on your mind today. Parents of children. That's how you become parents. You have children. Pretty good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Deep analysis from Saturday Morning Radio. If you are sending a kid to college, and I don't mean just for the first time. If you have a kid in college or are returning to college or whatever, there are some things that you really need to do, and they're not the kinds of things you might be thinking of. You always want to make sure they have some cash, a checkbook, and all that stuff. But that's all your problem. These are very important under today's laws. Number one, do a HIPAA form. Most people know HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A, which was the medical law passed many years ago that stressed, I think, to a fault, privacy in the industry. You have to have a HIPAA form for your kid, your patient, basically, you know, it's a student, that will designate certain family members and friends and others who can be updated about their medical treatment should they need any when they're gone. It is not merely enough that you are their parent anymore, and especially when that kid turns 18 and goes to college, now you have to treat that person almost as a stranger to get any information to get things done, and the further the distance, obviously, the more troublesome it's going to be. This takes place when, by definition, there's a medical emergency, and if it's an emergency and you're not getting through with your wishes, it's because you don't have a HIPAA form. And you can find them online. Just, you know, Google it, HIP, or Bing it, as I like to say, avoiding Google. HIPAA release form, and up it comes. You get it signed and witnessed and all that stuff. And then as long as the school has that for you, you will be fine. Another one, medical power of attorney. Now, most people understand the term power of attorney, but the medical power of attorney is just another legal document, but it designates you as a parent to be a medical agent for your college student. So if the child becomes in any way, shape, or form incapacitated, you can make all the informed medical decisions about the client. It's kind of like having a will in that it keeps other people from making decisions. If you die without a will, the state you live in will take over and do whatever they want to do. But if your kid doesn't have, or if you don't have, I should say, the medical power of attorney for your kid, then people at the medical facility at the school will be taking over and making your decisions for you, and that might not be a pretty sight. And the third and final is a general durable power of attorney. Most people have heard of a durable power of attorney, but not everybody knows exactly what it means. But it means that you have the power to act as the person, fundamentally, while that person is alive. And the term durable applies to if the child becomes incapacitated, unable to make decisions, or has trouble financially doing something or other, applying for benefits. It can be any number of things. So to get a general durable power of attorney, you can also just Bing it up on your computer, or you can do any of these things and follow up on them. This is all thank you very much to Consumer Warrior Clark Howard. So you can reach Clark's website at clarkhoward.com. I refer to it rather frequently because he has a great digested way of just packing a bunch of really practical, sometimes money-saving, sometimes trouble-saving, a lot of great ideas on the site. It's a wonderful place to learn about 529 plans and that sort of thing, too. So spend a little time cruising there. You can't help but learn something. And, again, thanks to him for coming up with these three ideas that I have just presented to all of you. It's axiomatic, I guess, that when you are a parent and you're sending a kid off, kid turns 18, he's still a kid. I refer to Adam as a kid, and he's over 40. And you have to understand that at that magic age of 18, that's just an expression anymore. You used to be in control. You're not in control unless you're in control legally. So do it right and know that. All right, that's what happens if you're a parent of someone going to college. Adam's going to tell you, because school is starting around here on Monday, some things you need to know about being a parent of a pre-college student.
I am, but first, I just wanted to throw out a sort of secondary trivia question. Princeton Review recently released their top 10 party schools, colleges, and if you want to call in and guess at the number one, we'll get something out to you. I'll give you a hint. It is not my alma mater of Tulane.
I'll give you another one. It's not my alma mater of University of Wisconsin either.
Tulane.
We were, but they've been slacking up.
They really have. Tulane has not been slacking. We came in fifth, which is pretty strong.
Good.
I think. But although being in New Orleans, I think our potential is unlimited. So
first time I read that survey when I was about college age student, I thought it was really strange because Madison wasn't listed. University of Wisconsin wasn't on it. There was an asterisk at the bottom and said, we don't rate the University of Wisconsin because we never think it's fair to rate pros and amateurs in the same study. We were so proud.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So there are some changes coming. Monday's a big day. Just get ready. There's going to be tons of traffic. 129,000 students or something like that return to public schools on Monday. It's going to be a zoo. Every parent's going to be taking them instead of using the bus, so just try and grin and bear it. But there are going to be a bunch of changes this year, mostly around student safety. So don't be surprised or get angry with the administrators. They do not make the rules. They just are there to enforce them. One of the things that's happened at my kids' school is they no longer have a walk-up option to pick up your kids. You can only pick up in a car or do extended day. And that's just for student safety. They felt that the students standing out near the courtyard, and there just wasn't enough way to ensure that everyone coming onto the school campus to pick up their kid was who they said they were. So they just eliminated it. You'll notice there's new fences up at every school. There's school safety officers at every school. Some are Duval County police. Some are actually Duval County Schools Police. Just depends what grade they're in. So a bunch of safety changes this year. One of the ones that you may not have seen yet is that all Duval County Schools will be equipped with an ID reader that will check a visitor's background, put their name in a database, and print a visitation badge, and also document the purpose of their visit. And
this I presume that a lot of this is the fallout from the school shootings.
Absolutely, yeah. It's called the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School Act, Public Safety Act. So it's all from that. And
I know both Rick Scott and DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, were in favor
of
a lot of this.
I'm a big time supporter of all of this. I think our kids need to feel safe at school and be safe. So the other thing, that every student will now have access to a mental health therapist at school. So if your kid is emotionally traumatized or has heard too much of the news about these things, there's a support system in place now where they can go talk to that. But this ID reader thing is going to cause some problems because there's going to be long lines to get into schools, and you're not just going to be able to walk your kid into his classroom like you have in years past, most likely. So try not to take it out on the administrators and the teachers.
You have to do that every time you show up at the school?
Yes.
okay.
Yep, and then you can get an approval with Duval County, which I've done because I've gone on field trips with my kids. You have to do that in advance and get that approval something like a few weeks before you actually do it. Okay. Now I don't know if that will trump getting your ID scanned at the front door or not, but that's something you could.
Yeah,
look
you'd
into.
Think there's a can't remember the name of it. The pass you use to bypass the lines at the airport.
TSA PreCheck.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. That would be nice.
The schools should have that available for parents who actually show up there frequently and do things like you said, with if you were a field trip type and that sort of thing, or just even a frequent visitor. It would be nice to have that availability so you can bypass the...
No doubt. And all this stuff is new, so I'm sure they'll hammer out the kinks, but I'm telling you, Monday is going to be a zoo, so just grin and bear it.
And a further note. You will be driving on the streets that you have been enjoying all summer long without school buses on them. Add a few minutes to your estimated length of the trip and keep it down a little slow. And when you see those lights flashing, don't try to go around them.
Yes.
Yes. You will be very unhappy if you are caught doing things of that nature, I promise you. You're going to be unhappy anyway because you're going to get held up once in a while going here and going there. But that is a very small price to pay for the safety of 129,000 more kids. All right, we'll be right back right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. Good morning, David.
Hey, morning. I was interested in the idea of... I noticed the other day that the Chinese were being accused of doing currency manipulation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the... dollar amount, I shouldn't even say dollar amounts, it might have been 2 or 3 cents, the equivalent, but when you start thinking of the totality of their portion of the world's economy, 2 or 3 cents could still come to, you know, $1 billion or so.
Oh, yeah. They've crossed the magic mark of 7 as the relative value of the yuan to the U.S. dollar. That's always been kind of a rule of thumb that when it gets above that, then it's unfair for our people who are trying to export and, shall we say, overly fair on their people trying to export. That's why they're doing it.
Right, yeah. It's kind of interesting. I have my grandfather's old stamp collection, and he had some of those stamps, the postage stamps between World War One and World War Two, where... the currency manipulation, you've probably heard that they had hyperinflation where you had to have a wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread.
Yeah, Germany and the Weimar Republic was noted for that.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I'm wondering, you know, if you look at China as being a rental ground for the corporations of the world, and so the corporations of the world... when Trump does a tariff, it's going to come back to the customers. The corporations don't care. I mean, it's just coming back to the customers to pay the difference.
Well, not much of it actually has accrued to consumers at this point because of the currency manipulation. Because what's happening is that they're making up a good share of the 10% tariff by changing the value of their currency. So the net effect is that we're still buying it for pretty much what we were buying it before, but it's the difference in the yuan and the dollar. So our people right now have not felt the impact nearly as much as you would if the currencies were stable. So that's how they're getting away with it right at this point.
Somebody takes it in the shorts. If I remember right, I'm old enough to be, I was a... you know, young man when Jimmy Carter was president, and the U.S. dollar against the Mexican peso at the time, I think it was 8 cents apiece. Each peso was worth 8 cents American, and so they were about 16 to the dollar. And the peso went so hyperinflation that it actually got to about 30,000 to the dollar.
Jeez.
And so when you start looking at, you know, the poor Mexican that's got a, you know, Walden Valdez that's picking coffee beans or something, and he thinks that he's going to be doing okay if he gets a raise of 1,000 times. But when you start going 30,000, you know, you're talking, people will never catch up. And so the idea that somebody just rode on a rocket ship past you and with all the profits, and it's going to take you a century to be able to get the equivalent, but they've buzzed by with all of the working capital. So I'm just wondering this, as I understand it, World War One was caused by currency manipulation. There were speculators, currency speculators, that would praise a country and then curse a country, yeah. Praise a country, curse a country. And they would do that time and time again, and after a while, it basically induced war.
That's why there is an IMF now, and one of their functions in life is if there's a formal declaration of a currency manipulator, which we don't normally do. We talk about them manipulating currency, but the Trump administration actually declared this past week China as a currency manipulator, and the IMF is then able to put some controls on them so it can't get out of control like it did a couple of times in the past, including in Europe. When George Soros manipulated their currencies so badly that he became a billionaire and all their citizens took it real hard. And he's been convicted of that, but he's over here, and I don't know why we let him stay, but that's another story altogether.
Well, what I was leading up to, you know, if you look at China as being rental ground, you know, is it a policy of China to have manipulated the currency, or is
yes.
it the corporations that are basically renting space in China that are strong-arming China into doing this?
I think there's a lot of the first one and a little of the second one. But if you look at what's happening to corporate supply chains now, they're leaving China. There are much better places to do business, both from a cost standpoint and from a stability standpoint. So you're seeing places like Sri Lanka and Vietnam that are taking a lot of factory work away from Chinese right now, and it's partly because of the instability that the Chinese are causing with the currency manipulations. So there's always going to be a winner and a loser, but they can spread them around quite a bit.
The currency speculation on Chinese part has only been recently, right?
Well, they've been doing it for many, many years. It was a complete and utter fix on their part. There was no market at all determining their value. And if you look back over the past few years, they have gently lowered it, but they have not just released it to find its market value. And there's you're never going to get parity out there until the market determines what the relative value of every currency is. But this is not a new phenomenon for them at all.
Well, that's right, and that gets into the whole purpose of money. Is it supposed to represent our reputation, mm-hmm. or is it something that somebody can simply grab a hold of and, you know, be down the road by the time you figure it out? So, you know, are people stealing the reputations of the people that do the work, you know, by manipulating the share price, by manipulating the taxes and the tariffs, and there are 8 or 10 different ways that, you know, the population of the world are being ripped off.
You are exactly right about that.
Yeah, so it's just, obviously wars don't need to happen if somebody is just playing the currencies against each other.
But you know what else they're doing that's very clandestine? They are buying silver and gold like there's no tomorrow, and then in the middle of the night when it gets a little too high, they put very silently out into the market these gigantic sell orders, and they're short selling it to get the price back down, and then they stock up again. And if you look at the net purchases of gold and silver from China, Russia, people like that all across the world, you wonder why. And there's no really comforting answer to that question, why are they doing that? That's
well,
where they're
the
really
Chinese
hoping to take over.
The, is it Chinese doing this visa, or is it? I mean, I know there are plenty of gold brokers here in America.
Yeah, they're minor. They're minor players compared to the gigantic banks, Goldman Sachs, for instance, and the Chinese government and the Russian government. I don't know for sure, but I would estimate that they're at least three of the top five manipulators for precious metals in the world.
Right. Yeah, and that gets into, you know, if you look at Russia, I don't even contend they're a government. They're what you call a kleptocracy, a government by theft.
Well put. Well put. How do you get oligarchs?
Yeah,
the old-fashioned way.
If organized crime runs a government, and, you know, it's not accurate to say it's a government. It's organized crime profiteering on a world stage. And so when you start looking at manipulation of currencies, or I was listening to a report about recycling, that basically the recycling of the world has fallen apart because of these tariffs.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, the music's playing. I love the conversation. I really appreciate your call. And
thanks.
Keep listening. Thank you. Yeah, there's so much to know out there in the world, and you do inevitably come to the conclusion that somebody's getting taken advantage of, and all you got to do to find out who is look in the mirror. That's how I feel. All right, a couple quick headlines we saw this week that I had to comment on. Tuesday, retirement savings. What to do when the market plummets? The simple answer, I say, is buy. Thursday, Bonner, the smart money should beware the bear market bounce. And my look at that says, that's a great idea when we get into a bear market. This is not a bear market bounce because they only happen in bear markets. Don't believe all that stuff you read. All right, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks to everybody for today. We will be back here same time next week. This is the Benway Financial Hour.